ॐ भरताय प्रतिबोधितां भगवता नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन कृतितां पुराणमुनिना मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीं भगवतीं अष्टादशाध्यायिनीम् अम्ब त्वामनुसन्धामि भगवद्गीते भवद्वेषिणी.
We're chapter 6, verse 14. Prashantatma vigatabhihi, Prashantatma vigatabhihi, Brahmachari pratesthitaha, Brahmachari pratesthitaha, Manasam yamya machittaha, Manasam yamya machittaha, Yutta asita matparaha, Yutta asita matparaha. Prashanta atma vigatabhihi brahmachari vrate stitaha, manaha samyamya matchittaha, yuktaha asitaha matparaha.
Listen, let me see. Can I see a thing for a minute?
It's taking that asi. I did something wrong there. It's asita, not asitaha. I was taking it for some reason as a past passive participle. It's not. It's a potential asita. Okay. Thanks. Remember in verse 13, verse 13 and 14 sometimes go together. But verse 13, he says, holding the body, the head, the neck in a straight line, motionless and on a steady platform. Then focusing the eyes at the tip of the nose. And stopping the mind, stopping the eyes from roaming around, just letting them rest here at the tip of the nose. Not that you're focusing on the tip of the nose, but you're just bringing the mind, the eyes in, to rest there, so they're not focused on anything in the world. They're pulled back in. All he's doing now is putting you in the asana, putting you in the meditative position. And now once you're in the meditative position, then he says, now that person, right, whose mind, prashantatma, whose mind has some shanti from the karma yoga, from the japa, from the practice of meditation, from the practice of karma yoga, there's a relative shanti there that comes from dharma, from your attitude. So the one that has that peace of mind, who is vigatabhihi, free from fear. Bihi means fear. Vigata means one who is freed from fear. And so Swamiji does something interesting, talks about this in some depth in his bhasha, which I thought was really meaningful. Many people have had this experience. Even when you begin listening, doing shravana, or doing shravana and following this teaching so as the vision is unfolding, your mind is really hooked on to the words of the teacher and the mind is starting to see clearly and to focus more and more on the self, there can be a moment of fear, right? Because the ahankara all of a sudden feels like it's going to dissolve. The same in meditation and nididhyasana. The person is doing nididhyasana contemplation. The ahankara, the mind, is actually in the process of what we would say resolving into the object of meditation, which is the Atma, which is the self. So the ahankara, the true self of the ahankara is Brahman is the Atma. When the mind is focused on, which includes the ahankara, you know, I am the meditator, I'm the one meditating, I am meditating on the self, on the Atma. But in that act of meditation, the ahankara actually resolves into the subject of meditation, which is the Atma. And so it can have a moment of fear, because it feels as though, it can feel as though it's being destroyed or annihilated. So you have to remember that for an ajnani, the ahankara's identification is not with the Atma. It is with the Atma plus the body. It is with the Atma in the form of the body. It is with the Atma in the form of the mind, in the form of the self. Right? And so it doesn't know. Right? The one who doesn't have knowledge, that mind doesn't know that its self is itself, but is free of the mind, right? All it knows, the mind knows, is that I, the mind, am the self. That's half of the satya mitya, you know? Because that's true. The mind knows I am the self. It is the self. But it doesn't know the other side, that the self is free of the mind. Because the body is the self, that's true. But it doesn't know that the self is free of the body, that they're not one entity. And so the ahankara, when contemplation is going on, or when the mind is being, because of the teaching methodology, which is pointing, pointing, pointing to the Atma, all of a sudden the ahankara can get a fright, because it feels like it's being annihilated, because its focus is no longer, you know, its focus is no longer on the self in the form of the body, or the self in the form of the mind. It's just on the self. Now, what's really wonderful, beautiful about this is that, in fact, there is no dissolution or destruction of the ahankara. The ahankara simply is resolving into what it has always taken to be itself. It's resolving into what is itself. It just did not realize that itself was not dependent for its being on the body or the mind or the thoughts or the emotions. And so it can have some fear at that moment, right? And so the one for who has let go of this fear, right? Because as long as the fear is there, that'll pull the mind back. The mind will kind of start and pull itself back. Hey, what's going on here? That. So for the mind that enjoys that shanti, who has overcome this fear, which is a natural fear, right? But who has overcome this fear, which means what? That now the ahankara, the mind, is quite comfortable just sitting with me, with myself, because it has broken this identification of the oneness between the body and the self, the oneness between the myself and the mind. Remember this satya mitya, to understand it, the profundity of it. The when the mind says, this, I am the self, I am the conscious being, that is true. That means the self that the mind has taken to be the self, it is that self that is Brahman. It's only half of the equation it doesn't realize. It realizes, I am the self, but does not realize that the self is free of it. But the self that it takes itself to be is the self that is free of it, right? Which means there's nowhere to go. That I am sitting, I am the self, I am Brahman. Right? It's the problem is the ajnanam on the part of the mind that hasn't recognized that I am Brahman. Right? That myself is stable, that the self of the mind is stable, is changeless, is the very Brahman, is the very self of the creation. It doesn't realize that, but the self that it knows to be itself is Brahman. Right? So there's not some other Brahman, some other self to discover. And so just imagine now, as the mind has some shanti, because of karma yoga, because of having done the work on the traumas and knows how to be with the mind, so the mind itself has some shanti. And then that mind is free of fear, just in terms of contemplation, it's free of fear. that means that that mind is free to totally resolve into the Atman. That's one way of taking the Vigata Bhihi, probably, in a sense, probably the best way. The other is, from really the standpoint of a sannyasi, or somebody who has, this is, the first way is recognition of the self as the Atman. The other way of taking the Vigata Bhihi is the freedom of fear because of Ishvara. I recognize this body-mind-sense orgasm as part and parcel of Ishvara, as being taken care of by the whole. So I don't have this worry, what is going to happen to me? That's not where my drishti is. That's not where my vision is. I'm not searching for ananda. I'm not searching for the world to make me happy. I'm not wondering what's going to happen to me tomorrow. I let the prarabdha take its course. And the prarabdha, my prarabdha, the karmas that brought me into this life itself, are part and parcel of Ishvara. And so I remain present to the prarabdha taking its course, and I have my shraddha is there in that. And so I don't spend my time filled with fear over what's going to happen to me tomorrow. You know? Or even the fear, this is again the ahankara, Swamiji uses this example nicely. Apparently, I think if I have the story right, you can read it in his bhasha there. One woman was attending a talk by, I think, Vivekananda or Ramakrishna or somebody, I think it was Vivekananda. This person, and he was talking about how there's he was talking about how in meditation there's a dissolution of the ego. He used the word dissolution of the ego. And so this woman became very frightened. She said, well, if there's a dissolution of the ego, I don't know if I want to meditate, because if there's a dissolution of the ego, then how will I cook dinner for my husband tomorrow? And how will I take care of life? And all so that type of fear, right? Those are fears. Those fears are born of ignorance. All of those fears have to be resolved before the mind has the freedom, right? If you think that meditation is going to dissolve you and destroy you, and then you won't be able to take care of your family, what about my children? Just what she said, what about my children? What about my husband? What about shopping? What about all the things that I need to do that I won't be able to fulfill my responsibilities because no ego there? You know, so you have to understand. See, this is profound, actually. You have to know what ego, what do they mean by ego? What does that even mean? What does it mean for the ego to dissolve? What does that mean? Does that mean there's no ego left? That's why Swamiji says it's really not dissolve, it's resolve. But see, if these things aren't understood, if there's no knowledge there, then it's a valid question, isn't it? Mm-hmm. So say that's what you think, how can you be free of fear if this is what you think? And so you have to understand what we mean by prarabdha karmas, the karmas that bring you in. What do we mean by the ahankara? Remaining as a dugdha bija, as a burnt seed. For as long as the prarabdha karma is here, the ahankara, the I thought is there, the vrittis are there, the body is there, the interaction is there, and at the same time, the absolute changelessness, you know, of your being is also there. Right? The maya is there, and the adhishtana, right? The projection is there, the creation is there, and the adhishtana, the basis of it, is there. You are the basis of it. And you are the one that's aparoksha. You are the one that's self-evident, self-effulgent. The mind has discerned that. And so when the mind has discerned me, that one that is always there, it's not a problem to resolve into me. I am the self. And the ahankara recognizes that its self is me, the atma. Right? That's what happens. The ahankara realizes that its self is me, the Atma, which is free of the body and the mind and the sense organs. It also realizes very clearly that the body, mind, sense organs have for their self me, the Atma. That me, the self, am free of all of that. And then as this teaching goes on, we recognize that this self that I am is the self of Ishvara. And so the teaching has to become clear. As the teaching becomes clear, the mind can contemplate without fear. Right? So the mind contemplates without fear. It means it resolves and sits happily in the self. It's not worried about the the itself losing itself. It no longer has the fear of losing itself. In fact, it recognizes, as we were, the one thing you can never lose, and the only thing that you can never lose is yourself. Right? And yourself is the truth of everything that is there. It's the one thing that's not subject to loss. The mind recognizes that, the ahankara recognizes that. And knowing that, the mind and the body and the sense organs have a safe haven. Right? I am the safe haven. Because nothing can disturb me or take me away or change me at all. And so instead of being something that causes fear, it in fact is the locus for the absolute absence of fear. But because of me, in fact, there is an absence of fear. Everything in the creation deserves fear, because everything in the creation is subject to death. Without exception, everything in the creation is subject to change, is subject to death, is subject to annihilation. You know? I am not. Mm-hmm. And when the mind discovers that, when the ahankara discovers that, it's actually the absence. It's the absence of fear. Right? And so this is what it says, vigata bihi is the absence of fear. The one for whom the fear has gone. The fear goes in the discovery of myself. You know? With myself, it is myself that is free from fear. There isn't anything else that's free from fear, really. So prashantatma vigata bihi, then brahmachari vrite stittaha, the one who is situated, who is abiding in the brahmachari vrata. Vrata means that vow of brahmacharya. What we mean here in terms of Vedanta, what is the vow of brahmacharya? The brahmachari means the one who is the student, right? The mumukshu, the one who is the student. The one who, as Shankara will say, the one whose life really is centered on the teacher and the teaching. So serves the teacher and the teaching. Serves the teacher means if we're so lucky, you live with the teacher and then you do the chores and take care of things and then the teacher teaches. That's what we have at the ashram. The teacher teaches and teaches and teaches and teaches and you take care of things. Right? The teacher gives the knowledge and takes care of that side of it, and then you do your chores and whatnot and take care of the situation. And so that's the life. That's the life of brahmacharya. So it's a life of study. It's a life of contemplation, a life of study, a life of service. But it's service to the teacher, service to the gurukula, so that you're not just doing nothing. When we were at the ashram at the Gurukula in India, we used to, Swamiji used to, he had a value for this, you know, so he had to make work for us all the time. We'd be, you know, cleaning the temple and sweeping and doing all this seva that we had to do. And then also here, when we had both courses here, when we were doing the course, like up north in Garberville, and then even when we ran the course on the East Coast, we did everything. We did all of the room cleaning, all of the maid work, you know, for the guests that were coming. We did all of the table setting, all of the dishes, all of the cleaning of the chalet, everything. We didn't have all of the gardening. We didn't employ anybody. As the students and the staff, we did all of it. And so Swamiji had a value for that. It was a lot of work. We also built the place, you know. That's a Guru Seva, then really we did all the cooking for Swamiji, all of his clothes. That's still all done. You know, everything we did, that was our part of it. That's what they call Seva. And Shankara, I'm talking about this because Shankara talks about it in the Bhasha, and Swamiji refers to it in his commentary. So that Guru Seva was there, you know. And then what was your responsibility? Was to take care of these things and to study. You go to a class, the teacher gives so many classes, you know, a day. You attend those classes, you study, you contemplate, and you do your seva. And that's the life. That's the brahmachari life, right? And so you're still busy in all of that. You're very busy and have all kinds of things you have to do. But it's all circled and contained, you know, within the gurukulam. And so the whole life, until this knowledge fulfills itself, or till you gain a certain strength in that knowledge, the whole life is just dedicated to that. And so we do that in our own way as mumukshus here in this country. Or even, now just another little aside, even in India, Swamiji provided that Gurukula setting, which even most of the sadhus and brahmacharis don't have, right? They have it because Swamiji would provide that. But what you can imagine in Rishikesh, what the sannyasis would have, or the brahmacharis, Swamiji or sannyasi would have their own little kutir, you know, and a little porch and whatnot, where they would give classes. They'd usually sit outside and give the classes. And the brahmacharis and the sannyasis from all over the area in Rishikesh would come in the morning, you know, as soon as the sun comes up, and would then have the class, and then they'd usually come at dusk when the sun is going down, because there were not clocks or anything like that. So that's when they would come for the class. And then they would do things about keeping up Swamiji's ashram and whatnot, but then they would also be responsible for their own kutir, wherever that was in the area, for keeping up their own kutir, for getting their bhiksha, you know, for taking care of their life, and for their study. Study, contemplate, attend class, do guru seva, and that's the life. Ours is more like that, in a sense, because we have our own lives to take care of. It's not like, which they do too, you know, like in Rishikesh. You have your own life you have to take care of. But then, what is central to your life, you know, is your... You have the life, which is your duty, which you have to handle. And then what do you do? What is important to you? Well, for a brahmachari or a sannyasi, what is central is your study. Study means whatever you are doing is a sadhana to gain nishta in this knowledge. And if you take it a step from there, what isn't sadhana in your life? What isn't sadhana in your life to gain nishta in this knowledge? You come to a point where there isn't anything that isn't sadhana, because everything that takes place in your life is in light of your knowledge. Yeah. And so where your mind is creating pain for you, or where your attitude toward your situation is containing pain for you, that's your sadhana. It's like handed to you on a silver platter. This is the sadhana. Because this situation, I need it to be different in order to be happy. Right? Or I'm oriented to this situation in a way that is causing me pain. Sadhana. That's how it should be. Your whole prarabdha should be your gurukula. Whole prarabdha. Right? That's the teaching, and that's what happens. That's how it happens. So the one who is immersed in that brahmachari vritta means that vow. Manaha samyamya. Now, that person, remember this is the person who's meditating. So now this person, having controlled the mind, and previously said how to do that, bringing the mind back in, pulling the mind in, controlling the mind from wandering about and this and that, through all of the different ways that we do that. But, now this is the thing, when the mind is pulling the mind in from samsara or from everything that it's engaged in, you don't do that for nothing. You just don't pull the mind in and then that's it. You're pulling the mind in to something. You're resolved, pulling the mind in so the mind can resolve into something. So then he talks about what that is. And he says, having controlled the mind, then matta chittaha, be one whose mind, whose chitta, whose mind is focused on me. Mat means it's on me. Me as Ishwara, me as Paramatma. Focus that, have the mind, have me be the focus of the mind, matta chittaha. And not only that, not only matta chittaha, not only let me be the focus, the Atma, the Paramatma, Ishwara, you know, the Parameshwara, Brahman, the Self, be the focus of the mind. Not only that, mat paraha, And let me be the ultimate end of the mind. And by ultimate end, pada means that which is, oh, by ultimate end, what they mean, I am the ultimate end of the mind in terms of what the mind wants to gain. It's not that in the end, ultimately, you know, I resolve there. I am the, let the Atma be what I ultimately desire. What is the ultimate end for me? What is the most, what is, let me say it like this. What is central to, for me? What is the most important to me? Let, so Krishna is saying as Parameshwara, let me be that, the one, let you be a matparaha, be one who, for whom I am the most important, that there is nothing more important than me, than Ishwara, than the Brahman, either as Brahman or as Ishwara. Right? Brahman is my own nature, Ishwara is myself as the whole creation. So let nothing be more important than that, be matparaha, and let the mind be engaged, let the mind be resolved in me. So matchittaha, the mind is resolved in me. And Swamiji makes this distinction. Let the mind, the one for this is, the one who does this is a yuktaha. This is a person who is accomplished as a yogi, as a meditator. Let that yuktaha sit in meditation. Asita means sit. Let that yuktaha, that one who is a yogi, who is matchittaha, matparaha, let that one sit in contemplation. You know? So now, you can be contemplating for different things. Like, let me sit in meditation. This is an example that Swamiji used. Let me sit in meditation so that I can lower my blood pressure. Okay. So I'm doing it all fine, doing it. But that's not matparaha. What is most important for me? It's like doing yoga asanas for health. It does make you healthy. And it does do that, and that's fine. But a lot of people do asanas for that. Or they meditate. Let me do japa so that I can relax my mind. Let me meditate so I can relax my mind and give more vigor to my body. That's the padaha there. I'm looking for my well-being, my good health. But here, it's not. Let the mind be focused on me, resolve into me. And let me be that which is most important to it. You know, I become the object. Let me be the object of desire. Let me be the ultimate end of the mind, what the mind is seeking. Let me be that which the mind is seeking. That's the matparaha. So for such a person, that person who sits in that way, that person is yuktaha. That person is a meditator, one who's accomplished in meditation. Okay? It's a really beautiful verse. And then it goes on to say more about it. Yunjanyevam sadatmanam Yujanyevam sadatmanam Yogi netamanasaha Yogi netamanasaha Shantim nirvana paramam Shantim nirvana paramam Matsamstam atigachati Matsamstam atigachati Yunjan eva sada atmanam yogi niyata manasaha shantim nirvana paramam matstam adhigacchati. Now he gives the pala of that yoga, of that meditation. He says, yunjan means meditating here. Kristen. don't know why I'm having these little spells. Sometimes the use of Atma is confusing, whether he's talking about the Atma or talking about the mind. Mm-hmm. So I just realized in the grammar I got confused a little bit. So Yunjin means meditating in this manner, but Yunj comes from Yuj, it means to connect. So Yunjin means connecting, it's a present participle. Yunjin Atman, connecting the mind in this way, means resolving the mind into the self. So this Atmana means the mind. So Yunjin and Shankara also doesn't translate. So I want to see what Swamiji did with this. So Yunjin Evam Sada Atman, Atmanam, always resolving the mind in this manner. Evam means in this manner. So say always resolving in meditation the mind in this manner. The yogi, the one who meditates, Niyata Manasaha, whose mind is under control, whose mind is controlled. Niyata means controlled. So mind and sense organs are controlled. So the yogi, whose mind is controlled, who is always sada, sada always resolving, bringing the mind into that, and making the mind meditate in this way, then shantim nirvanam paramam matstam adigachati. That yogi, adigachati, he gains the shanti, which is matsamstam, which is the abiding in me, the shanti, which is the abiding in me, which is nirvanam paramam, nirvana paramam. Nirvana paramam means the ultimate moksha. Nirvana is used for moksha, right? which is the highest moksha. Right? This is the highest freedom. So this is what he's saying here. First of all, this verse is giving the pulla of what the yogi, you know, who is able to contemplate in this way, what he gets. So that yogi attains that peace, that shanti, which is Brahman. Not the shanti of the mind. It's the shanti of the mind that you can gain through karma yoga. You get a relative shanti. Or through the practice of nididhyasana or the practice of japa, you can also bring the mind into a state of quietude. It's kind of a forced state of quietude. You know, through pranayama and japa, through meditative practices, you can make the mind quiet. Through karma yoga, you can get a relative shanti. But these shantis, this type of peace, belongs to the mind. It's a shanti base. It means a quietude of mind. The shanti that we're gaining here is the shanti which is the very swarupa, the very nature of Brahman. And that shanti doesn't come and go. It's not a relative shanti. It's the shanti which underlies agitation. It's the shanti that underlies whatever the state of mind is. It's the self. Right? So that's why the shanti, the mind is never, no matter what its condition, is never away from the shanti, which is the self. And that shanti, then once one gains that shanti is the gain of Brahman, is the gain of knowledge. That's a gain that can't be lost, right? Because the gain that takes place through knowledge is a gain, the removal of ignorance. There's no loss of that gain, because the self, There's no loss or change in the self. The self isn't bound by time. And so the shanti of the self also is not bound by time. So it's that peace, which is really my own nature, that matsamstam, which is my very nature, the very nature of Brahman, is shanti. And that shanti is the freedom, because nobody can take it away, right? And it's that shanti that is also... Not only can nobody take it away, it's constant and it's the very, very, it's free from time. It's the shanti that is never displaced. Shanti that is never hidden, no matter what the vritti is, no matter what the mood is, no matter what the emotion is. This shanti is the self of that emotion. right? Even the darkest emotion, the most painful emotion, this shanti is the self of that emotion. And so the one who knows this doesn't have to, or this is what in Aprochanabhuti, what Shankar is talking about also, wherever the mind goes, that nirvikalpa shanti is there. Whatever the mind thinks, whatever the mind feels, whatever is going on in the creation, nothing ever is away from that shanti, which is the self of that experience. Whatever experience is there, that shanti is itself. And the one who recognizes that, right, is that is the highest freedom. That is the ultimate moksha. Because nothing, you can't do anything about it. The mind can't do anything about it. The body can't do anything about it. Ishwar can't do anything about it. The universe can't do anything. Ishwar means a whole creation. Even if Ishwar wanted to do something about it, he can't do anything about it. Because it's that shanti is his self. Mm. Right? It's Ishwar's self also. Mm. It's Ishwar's reality. It's the very being, the very existence, that the very consciousness that Ishwar enjoys. Right? And the Maya can't, the Maya Upadhi can't touch it. Just like the Maya Upadhi, your body, mind, sense organs can't touch that shanti. The Ishwara Maya Upadhi can't touch that, you know, the Sameshti Maya Upadhi, the total Maya Upadhi of Ishwara can't touch that shanti either, nor can it get away from it. So there is no escape. The mind can't escape. So wherever the mind is, I am. So once the ahankara is placed properly in me, there's no escape from me, right? Because there's nothing away from me. I am the very self of every experience that is there. And that experience, which is that experience, which is the aparoksha, the self-evident nature of my being, what is its swarupa? Shanti. That's why when we do this nididhyasana, like in the meditation that we did, to be able to just spend some time, just relax your body and mind, let it be what it is, doesn't matter. Don't force it to be anything. You just let it be. That's what you're doing. If you're forcing anything, you're forcing your relaxation. So you just accept it all, you let it all be. And then just recognize, differentiate, you know, the self, that self of the mind, which is absolutely still. It is so strong, it is so pure, it is so me, you know? It is the unencumbered, pure me. I love to think of that Dakshinamurti or the Buddha, that half-smile, because it is such a beautiful symbol for your nature, the one that is always abiding, and it's so, the self is so strong. That's why when you're with a jnani, you know, and I, of course, I always think of Swamiji because that was my role model. But there's a strength. There's a stability. There's a strength. The strength is the Atma. It's not a big muscle. I don't mean that. It's the strength that it cannot be displaced. It can't be changed. It can't become depressed. It is what it is, and what it is so so loving without action. Right? It's so whole, so complete, and there's nothing that can alter it at all. And so when you're with somebody whose mind is at the feet of that self, then you also feel that stability, because that person's mind, it's that mind is enjoying the stability of that self, right? It's not that the mind is stable. The mind, by its nature, is not stable. But the self of the mind is absolutely stable. And the jnani is a bhakta to that self, right? The mind of the jnani revels in that self, is always sitting at the feet of that self, is always, you know, has that self for its dhanam. You know? And so that's why you can feel that type of safety. The jnani feels safety, and you feel safety in the presence of the jnani, in a sense. Right? Because it's not the jnani, it's the self. It's the Atma. you feel safe in the stability of the Atma. And so, and that Atma isn't going to like you one day and not like you the next. Can't happen. That's really nice. You know, the Atma's not going to turn on you. Or to say, well, you know, today I don't think so. You never have to worry. You never have to worry about that. You know, today, you know.
Gotcha.
Yeah. gotcha. Not today. Yeah. Or today I don't love you as much as I loved you yesterday. Mm-hmm. Never. That's safety. That's ananda. Just that. That is ananda. The mind is safe. Nothing will ever happen. Nothing can happen because it's not its nature. It can't do it. It can't do it. It's not its swarupa. And so that, as the jnani, the one who knows, becomes devoted to that safety. And the samsara is not worth it. Samsara isn't safe. And so you can allow, when you understand that, it's not as safe. It's not, you can't give your heart to the samsara. Because by its nature, it isn't safe. And so you love it as it is, but your attachment is to that which is not going to ever cause harm. Because it can't. The world causes harm. Because it can. And if it can, I would say the world causes harm, it causes hurt, because it's unstable. That's why. It's not even trying to. It doesn't need to try to, it just does. It does because it's not stable. Right? That means that whatever nice thing is there is going to go away. Right? And so your devotion then becomes not to one thing in particular. It becomes to the whole Ishwara, the relationship to the whole, to Ishwara. And then your devotion is to, your trust is to that which is stable. Then when that, if that's clear, then there's the living out of your prarabdha and your that karma yoga buddhi, it's your care and love for those who are in your prarabdha. It's just because that's your swarupa. That's your nature. What else are you going to do? And if you're doing something else, then that's your sadhana. If your life isn't about the care and love for whoever is in your prarabdha, then wherever that's not so, that's your sadhana. It's nothing to be mad at yourself about. It's just that's where the sadhana is. You see what I mean? Because your nature, there's no reason. The very nature is ananda. The very nature of the self, the mind's abiding in the self, that is ananda. And so if the mind isn't enjoying that, if you're enjoying that ananda or that wholeness, then the care for what is in front of you is your natural expression. That's who you are. That's your natural expression. If that isn't happening for you, then that's your sadhana, right? Because that's where all of the likes and dislikes come in, and this person did that, and this person did that, and this person did that to me, and I'm in, it goes on and on. That's the samsara that we bring as mumukshus to this knowledge. We bring that samsara. But all of that gets unraveled. It just keeps getting unraveled. But then just to get back to what I'm saying, your nature is the Atma. That is your nature. And so when the world is taking you away from that, taking your mind away from enjoying that relaxation, then the world is, you know, that's your playground. That's the area where you have some work to do. How else are we going to, you know, know where we need the work. Bhagavan, you know, gives it to us. Until all's well. Until all's well, there's this little sadhana here and the sadhana there and the sadhana there and the sadhana there. It's fine. That's it. That's the life. I think Swamiji in his thing says something like that. This is your, that sadhana, that's your life. That's your life. And it's enjoyable. It's an enjoyable life. Because the fruit, the karma pala, the pala of this knowledge is so much, you know. And so you just go on taking care of things and taking care of things, shining it up, you know, in the light of your knowledge. And there's a wonderful pala to it, which is that shanti. It's twofold. It's the shanti of the mind through the karma yoga buddhi and just developing that an attitude which is harmonious with the creation as it is. And that is taking place and maturing in that shanti, which is yourself. And so that keeps, that recognition keeps growing and growing. The shanti that is there illumining my pain, that becomes my being, and uproksha recognized all the time, you know, as there holding my pain. And then my pain keeps resolving as I gain vairagya, as I stop asking the universe to make me happy, as I stop asking people to be in a particular way so that I can be happy. At some point, you stop asking that, and then you just enjoy the people as they are. But to do that, it's a step by step by step thing, you know, because to really be able to do that, you have to be able to enjoy yourself as you are. And I mean to feel the wholeness in yourself. When you feel the wholeness in yourself, then you don't need somebody else to be a certain way to give it to you. And so it's just a gradual, you know, step by step unwinding of the mind. And it's a very beautiful journey. You know? And the whole life is about that learning. So let's stop there. The next verse goes into, you can't eat too much and you can't sleep too much. Can't do this and can't do that. If you're going to meditate, doesn't work to eat too much. Doesn't work to sleep too much. It's a nice verse. Also, let's stop here. Okay.
Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Hari Om Shri Guru Pyo Namaha. Hari Om.
Testing.
Dhyana is for Atma Vishuddhi.
Vishuddhi?
Yeah.
That's pure. That Atma is the mind, purity of the mind. Pure. And then he talks in his Bhasha there about different types of the Vishuddhi, right? It talks a lot about kashayas, the elimination of impurities in the unconscious. It's a nice section that he has there. Also, he talks about Ishwara Ishvara Priti.
So it's for
purification.
Purification.
Mm-hmm. And he takes it to mean, instead of just antakarana shuddhi, which is, means purity of mind, vishuddhi, he's talking about getting into the unconscious, into the, you know, deeper things in the unconscious. There's a nice section on that. You should read that.
He says that ultimate meditation is what enables Atma Dhyana to take place.
No, not really.
Well, that's what it says. That's what it literally says here. It says, not for Atma Dhyana, even though ultimately it enables Atma Dhyana.
Yeah. What he means by that is that Nididhyasana, Karma Yoga plus Nididhyasana, some other things, bring about the antakarana shuddhi that's necessary for knowledge to take place. But the nididhyasana is not knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
But it brings about the antakarana shuddhi that can be helpful. But then you can't separate, you have to be careful not to set, that you can't separate the nididhyasana contemplation from karma yoga.
Mm-hmm.
And so many other things, because without the karma yoga, you also can't contemplate. So there's kind of a one thing leads to the other, and they depend on each other.
Right.
Yeah.
It's not. So it's a part of it.
It's a part of it, but there's
it's
a real
important.
It's a very
it's,
yeah. Well,
you can't eliminate it. Right. That's also said, right? Or at least most people can. Maybe there's people that don't need it, you know, born in such a state of, maybe there are, like, such people, but maybe rare.
You have to be careful, because even with knowledge itself helps you to gain the karma yoga buddhi. It all... Knowledge itself gives you that attitude. If that karma yoga buddhi is there, and if knowledge is there, the mind naturally becomes contemplative.
Okay.
Right?
So,
I'm just against thinking that you have to sit down to meditate in order to gain knowledge, and that's there's so much conditioning around that. It's important to understand what place contemplation plays. You know? It's not that it's not important, but you know, you just have to understand how it fits into the scheme of things.
And that even like that meditation will cause enlightenment. I mean, like when I took TM, that was kind of, I don't remember the words they used, but that was, I think, the story,
mm-hmm.
was if you meditated, you'd get all these benefits, but you'd also get enlightened.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And that's the strong conditioning in this country. So you just, I'm always careful that we get it put in the right, understand it, what it is. It's very pleasurable. There's nothing wrong with meditation. It's pleasurable and it slows everything down and gives the mind time to really be with yourself, to recognize who you are, you know, without the mind being so distracted in daily life. So it's a nice, an important thing to do. But.
So how does it exactly work in terms of when my mind engages in like daily activity, right, and I have the awareness, or the consciousness is there that mind actually rests in the Atma, that awareness is also there, but then the activities are taking place and the activity somehow engage the doer naturally, because there's a certain, as if it's kind of built in us, I'm saying.
Yeah, that's right. But that's all metta, right?
Right. So
it's there, but the truth of it is there also.
Right. Okay. So my point is, like, now it feels a little bit like there is an oscillation between, as if in between the breath,
uh-huh.
I realize who I really am. But then there is a breath that, you know, it's like an analogy, you know, I inhale,
yeah.
Okay, then there's this stop. And then I realize, yeah, this is who I am. And then I exhale, and I'm kind of getting engaged and carried away again with the breath. And then I realize again, yeah, this is who I am. So maybe I go out into the world and I do things, and then I realize, okay, I'm not this. I'm not this driver of this car. You know, I realize that, yeah, I'm not really, that's not what it is, you know. But then in the next moment, I'm the driver of the car again. So what you're saying, the mitya and the satyam, they kind of go into this intimate dance with each other. But for somehow, it's not dissolving into just consciousness. There's still this identification seems to be kind of reinforced by everything that I engage with, and that's maybe why meditation is the easiest way to connect with that. The moment in meditation, that's what they say, right? After the meditation comes the laundry or something, you know, it's like, yeah.
This is why meditation's helpful, because it slows everything down. But there does come a time when you're never not meditating. You know, what I mean by that is, you know, when you do japa, when you learn how to do japa, it starts out where you're saying mantra, like mantra silence, mantra silence,
mm-hmm.
mantra silence. But then after you've done it for a while, then it's the silence, the mantras coming and going in the silence.
Mm-hmm.
But the silence is always there.
Mm-hmm.
The mantra is not displacing the silence.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happens in your life also. It's like there comes a time, and initially it can be like, oh, your mind's involved in this and that, and then you have to say, oh, wait a minute. Then you bring the mind back to yourself, and, oh, yeah, I'm there, this is who I really am. Then it gets engaged, oh, then you have to stop, bring it back, oh, yeah, here I am, I'm still here, this is who I really am. There comes a time when that who I really am is always there, and the mind is doing its thing. But the mind never displaces me. I am always there as the constant, and the mind is engaged in doing and talking and all of this carrying on. But myself isn't being covered by that. See what I mean?
Yeah, no, I actually theoretically understand that. So when you're saying, if you work on the project, you're correcting maybe some papers of some students, you know, or something, you never lose that connection with that Atma consciousness? Is it,
no, and I'll
but is it always there? I mean, is it always like an experience? You know, was it, I mean, I'm not just saying,
okay,
is it as a knowledge always there?
Yeah.
I know as a knowledge is always there, but is it actually living presence? That's kind of what I mean.
Let me put it this way. This might help you.
Uh-huh.
They actually use this example in Panchita Shri. If as an Agnani,
mm-hmm.
I'm reading a book, I'm studying, I'm talking to people, but the fact that I am the body, I don't have to be saying, oh, I'm the body, I'm the body, I'm reading the book, I'm the body, I'm the body. I just know it. It's, I'm always there, here I am, and that's my experience, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's an experience that is underlying all everything that I'm doing, and it's clear to me, I don't worry about it, I don't think about it, it's a given. Right? Now, what about when you recognize that what you had taken to be the body
mm-hmm.
is the Atma?
Mm-hmm.
Then that's the given. And it's experiential as you, a paroksha, not as an object, but as your, it's the ground of all your experience. I am the ground, the changeless ground of all my experience, and that's self-evident. Just like the body is self-evident, and you don't need to keep labeling it because it's known. But what is really known, even though you call it the body, what is really known and self-evident is the Atma. So once the Atma, once yourself has been differentiated and the mind sees it, really sees it, and you've had time to bring the mind back, like you say, there comes a time when that nishta is there. There's no having to bring the mind back. Wherever the mind is, I'm there. Mm-hmm. And it's been differentiated. You see what I mean? So that's just a maturing process. And that's why, now this is why nitta dhyasana and things are really helpful, because you're giving the mind a chance to just sit with you. Mm-hmm. And then the mind gets used to differentiating the self from the maya, from the mithya. Because remember, that satya mithya, the self of the mind, right? I am the self of the mind, right? The mind says, you know, I am the self, because I am the self is itself. It's just that self is changeless, and so that has to be, the mind has to see that. Say, oh my gosh, it will say, oh, I am the self, I the self really am changeless. Here it's talk, the mind is talking and all of that, but the self itself, which is Brahman, is absolutely changeless and just totally present as the very being, as its very being, like the clay is the very being of the pot. I am the changeless being of all of my experience, and I am aparoksha, I'm self-evident. I am anyway, but once I recognize that self-evident me is really free of all of these things, that's just a given. And you don't lose that anymore. You don't have to be saying, your mind doesn't always have to be talking about it. Because I am it.
Okay.
You don't have to talk about what you know.
No, that's good. Thank
you.
Thank you.
The mind and the senses, the conditioning is so powerful. I had this experience the other day. You know those little car washes where you go in and that thing moves? You know, you're sitting still, but the thing starts moving over your car. And I noticed that if I fix my eye on something that's stable, I feel stable. But if the moment my gaze leave something stable, such as the thing moving, I feel that the car is moving.
Yeah.
And I could go back and forth with that again and again.
Yeah.
And keep being fooled.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's a thorough delusion. Yeah. It couldn't be any more than it is. It's total.
Yeah.
Right? That's why it takes a little time to unwind it all.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tibby didn't join us out here today. Well, let's call it a night.